Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn. Hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
I ended up collapsing at work one day because of pain. I don't know how to break this to you. Your results came back as stage 4 GIST. They actually told me I had 6 months to live. My buddy told me, he's like, hey, before you die, I want you to try to fight naturally. So after a couple months of being keto, like I said, the cancer cells were disappearing. The tumors were shrinking. One of my local buddies actually sent me a video of Jeff Prosperous last year one day, and that's what got me interested in, you know, starting carnivore. Today's date, I'm about 20 pounds heavier than I was the day I started, and most of that's muscle. Some of it's ego. but carnivore, man, I have never felt so good in my life carnivore. I may have cancer. I may have stage 4. I may be numbered on time, but I'm going to take that cancer. I'm going to put it in my back pocket, and I'm going to live my life the way I need to live my life, and it could ride with me, or it could fall behind, but I'm going to make cancer my bitch. It's not going to make me its bitch. Energy levels, dude, through the roof. It's just amazing how one person's bravery could lead to so many other people being brave. I've been facing every one of my fears since I got my diagnosis. I'm 32 years old, going on 33. I'm supposed to be dead, and I feel better than I have my whole life. With or without that diagnosis, I have the power to change.
What advice would you give someone, a family or a friend, if they were diagnosed with cancer?
Oh.
Hello and welcome, Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the power of a proper human diet. And today I am thankful, grateful, and blessed to have Anthony on the channel. Anthony, I caught you on a couple of videos over on Jeff DeProsperous channel, Blessings on My Journey. Looking forward to hearing your story. How you doing today?
Doing pretty well. I'm over here on the West Coast, so it's 11 o'clock. I'm just now eating my first meal of the day, beef, butter, bacon, and eggs, you know, big scramble. Honestly, I'm super grateful to be a part of your channel, to be your guest, Carrie. Like you said and mentioned, I was Jeff's guest a couple times on his show, and it's amazing to be a part of such a movement to inspire people on the best way to feel, you know, to heal themselves, to get into my subject of why I'm your guest. I got stage 4 GIST cancer. GIST stands for gastrointestinal stromal tumor. I had a surgery back in July of 2022. They flayed me open. I lost almost a quarter to a third of my stomach. They didn't give me full measurements, but I lost a fair amount of it, and a tumor the size of a softball. But what led up to my tumor and my cancer, I was 30 years old when I had my surgery. I'm 32 now. I'll be 33 come September. So I'm on my second full year of my cancer journey. But what led up to that is all my life, starting when I was a kid, you know, infant, just constantly sick when I ate food. Didn't know nothing about it. Didn't think nothing about it. My parents, you know, took me to the doctors. As a child, they had me on different medications for, you know, bowel movement issues, stuff like that. Flash forward into my teen years, you know, still bowel movement problems all my life, you know. I thought it was normal to eat and be sick afterwards, you know, not good. And we'll flash forward to my early 20s. I think I was like 23 or 24. I ended up collapsing at work one day because of pain. And my line of work was tree service. I was a tree climber, grounds guy, whatever needed to be done. No physical work. And so I'm used to pain and enduring stuff like that. And so when I collapsed at work because of pain, you know, that night my parents took me to the hospital. I had gallstones. So I ended up not knowing anything about health-related stuff. The doctor was like, hey, you got gallstones once. You're going to get it again. So I was like, hey, remove my gallbladder. I won't get gallstones that way. If I don't, you know, have a gallbladder, can't get stones. Well, lo and behold, my arrogance of my lack of knowledge back then, I wish I would have kept my gallbladder, because what I've learned through now is I got gallstones because I didn't have enough fat in my diet in the first place. Because your gallbladder produces bile, and if it's not getting used, it'll crystallize and get hard, which causes the stones. So luckily, here we are 6-7 years after the gallbladder surgery. I finally learned something that could have, you know, saved some body parts, but it is what it is. Now I'm spreading this information for others, so hopefully others don't have to lose body parts over neglect. So we'll get into the cancer stuff. I think I told you my surgery was July 27, 2022. It was over in Seattle, Washington. I spent, oh goodness, it was 8 or 9 days in the hospital. They wanted me longer, but I'm, hospital's like prison. I've never been to jail, but it feels like a prison to me. You know, you're tied to the bed, can't do nothing. So the moment they told me what I had to do to get released out of the hospital, I forced myself to do whatever had to be done, you know, walk, go to the bathroom, whatever needed to be done. I was like, all right, I want to go home. So to go on about my surgery, I didn't even know I had cancer. I went to 3 different cancer centers prior to the surgery I was describing and had biopsies done, the endoscopy down the throat to, you know, pull a section of the tumor off to test to see if it was benign or cancerous. And all 3 cancer centers told me I was cancer-free. It was a benign tumor. Let's do the surgery. Well, that's when they did the surgery. They flayed me open, and the doctor didn't know what the tumor was. So they shipped it out of state to Portland, Oregon, to a place called Oregon Health Science University. And just so happens to be that place has the GIST specialist, which happens to be my type of cancer, and came back as GIST, stage 4. And GIST is a very rare type of cancer, according to what my oncologist says. And when I say oncologist, I mean my specialty oncologist in Portland, Oregon. I've had him for about 1.5 years now. I've been through 7 or 8 local oncologists, just because my local area health isn't, you know, the medical field isn't as advanced as the bigger cities. But I will say right off the get-go, my oncologist in Portland told me my cancer is inherited through germline DNA. My great grandmother had it, and I was told I'm going to be on treatment the rest of my life till I'm dead, because there's no way a person naturally, is what I've been told since day 1. I hopped on treatment. Of course, you know, I was young and dumb, didn't know any different. My father had cancer and he passed in 2019 from it. So I was like, oh, I want to, you know, win. I want to start treatment ASAP, get good. And I started treatment my 31st birthday, September 9th, the day I was at the oncology center. They actually told me I had 6 months to live, was their educated guess, because my cancer was untreated for 6 years at that point in time. Back when I had the gallbladder removed when I was 24, 25, that softball sized tumor was only the size of a pea. So in 6 or 7 years, it went from pea size to softball size and spread to the liver, you know, metastasized, I think is the proper word. And so I hopped on chemo in September. I did chemo September, October, November, December, and I quit chemo sometime in January. I don't know the exact date. It was like January 30th, January 20th, somewhere in January, I quit chemo. And the only reason why I quit chemo is when I went in for my PET scan to see where my cancer, you know, was at, because of treatment, the doctor straight up told me and showed me the images, my cancer had spread The tumors had gotten bigger. We need to change treatment and get on something that's going to work better, because I was taking a pill called Sunitib Malate, M-A-L-A-T-E. Anyways, they were 37.5 milligram capsules, and I had to take a pill a day for 130 days with no breaks in between. So it's like with other types of chemo, like Jeff has, or other people that have tanks, you know, they get time on and time off from chemo. I never got a break at all. It was 130 days of poison straight. I sent you some email pictures of what chemo did to me. So when you upload those into this chat, it'll be good to, you know, people could see the comparison of what chemo did. And at that time, I will say I was 110% listening to the doctors, you know, the oncology, Western medicine. They told me eat whatever you want to eat. Nutrition's nutrition. As long as it stays in, that's what matters. There's no special way to eat. So I went to two nutritionalists. They both said that. I even went to oncology nutritionalist, and they told me eat whatever I want to eat because food is food. It doesn't matter. And mind you, my mother has gone to every appointment but one of mine, or two of mine, because she was sick, and I don't want, you know, can't be around sick people. But she's only missed two appointments. And so my mom was with me during these nutritional appointments, all these oncology appointments. And if she, you know, she's playing fly on the wall, let me do all the speaking, and she cannot believe the mistreated I've been through from, I wouldn't say all doctors, but doctors with the egos. I think that's the proper way to describe that. I love doctors, man. My primary doctor in my hometown, he was a CT scan to show that there was a tumor. You know, without him, I definitely would still be not as well as I am, or possibly dead by now. So I don't have a problem with doctors at all. I just have a problem with the doctors that have the ego. You know, they let their doctor badge overpower everything. And that's not right to me. I did try a second line of chemo after I quit the Sunitib Malate. The first line of chemo I tried for 130 days caused heart problems, caused kidney problems. Of course, blood work got worse. I actually went in January of 2023 to have a ureteral stent put in because my left kidney was starting to fail because of chemo. And mind you, I didn't have any kidney problems prior to chemo. So in 2023, I had three different surgeries. All was ureteral stent surgeries, putting stents in and pulling stents out. And I'm sure if for a female, it's not even fun, but for a male, that's definitely not fun. You know, we're not designed to go in areas like that, in my opinion. But during the 9 or 10 months I had the ureteral stent in, that was some of the most pain and uncomfortability-ness I've ever had to deal with. The doctor put the wrong size stent in, so it was stretching out my urinary tract, so I urinated blood for 10 months straight, daily. And I was told it was because I play with myself or I'm having aggressive intercourse. And at that time, it's been a couple of years since I've done anything, you know, sexually-wise, just because of my situation with life. Mm-hmm. And that's why I made that statement earlier about doctors. I get irritated with doctors that have egos. You know, if they actually listened, they would learn from the patient versus just, oh, I got a degree, I'm going to ignore the patient. But I actually quit chemo, like I said, January 31st, 2023. I'd had that stent surgery shortly around that time. After the stent surgery, I tried a second line of defense. It's called Stivarga, or I don't know how to pronounce the generic name. It's Retrofab. Anyways, I tried that chemo pill for 4 days, 4 or 5 days, something like that. It was under a week, and the side effects instantly were way worse than the old type of chemo. Like, my hands instantly hurt, my face was getting tingly, like not normal feeling stuff. And I was like, this is not life to me. I'm not gonna subject myself to poison anymore. And my buddy told me, he's like, hey, before you die, I want you to try to fight naturally. And I thought he was full of crap, you know. I was like, there's no way I'm not going to win as far bad as I was. So my buddy that I was talking about, he convinced me to get a gym membership. So I went to the local gym. This was like 2 weeks after quitting chemo. I had my mom drive me to the gym, explain the situation. My local gym was nice enough to give me unlimited time available until I got my finances together to pay for a membership. But so the first month at the gym, great, great people. Shout out to my local Anytime Fitnesses. But I quit chemo. I got a gym membership. And at the gym, I just learned to, you know, face my fears and ask questions and learn. I went to each coach. I was like, hey, you know, I explained my situation. I'm dying because of my cancer. I'm trying to figure out how to win. Can you help me with nutritional and exercise advice? And the fact that I was willing to learn and educate myself, they were willing to teach me certain things. And I've done every diet out there 2 to 3 months at a time. Most diets were 3 months at a time between my cancer scans to see what food groups would do to my cancer growth. But I'll be honest, I didn't make vegan the 3 months. Vegan was like 2 months in and I had to stop just because I started feeling like crap and I started losing weight and being in the gym. That's not what I was trying to do. I was trying to bulk, you know, so I could have the weight to lose if I did start another type of chemo later. Because without mass, you know, you can't survive. So it's been an interesting rodeo, I will say. But going back to the diets at 3 months at a time, plant-based and vegan slowed down the cancer growth a little bit compared to the standard American. It's just I felt like crap, my blood work wasn't getting any better. Standard American, of course, we're not even getting into that because look what happened to me with my cancer situation. That was standard American most of my life. So I did keto, and keto slowed down the cancer growth quite a bit. Like drastically, still growing, but it was hardly growing, you know. For every 7.5 milliliters of blood, I had one tumor cell in that vial of blood. And now I'm on my 11th month of carnivore. We'll get to how I started, but I'm now 11 months in on carnivore. I have no new tumor cells growing. So for every 7.5 milliliters of blood, I have zero tumor cells, according to my naturopath. And so that's telling me I have nothing new growing. And then through oncology with the CT scans, it's actually showing aggression where my tumors are shrinking. I had a scan about a month and a half ago, and one of my tumors shrunk almost 40%. It was like 38% it shrunk. And that was just in a 3 month increment. And my oncologist was blown away, like completely dumbfounded. But I've told my oncologist, all of them, the same thing I'm telling you and the same thing I told everybody. You know, I've been honest since day one of what I've tried and what's worked and what hasn't worked. And my oncologist tells me that my cancer is smart enough that it could turn on and turn off when it wants to. And my lifestyle and choices have nothing to do with it. And mind you, this is the best oncologist in the West Coast with my type of cancer. Wow. And I'm like, I love him. You know, he's a smart guy, but he's closed-minded. And that closed-mindedness, you know, is so sad because he could be saving a hell of a lot more people and making people feel better during being saved. Just if you were open-minded and listen to a patient living with the illness. I mean, you know, you and I could have the same type of cancer and have different mutations. What will work for you might not work for me, but we can still bounce ideas off each other and try. That's what I mean about being open-mindedness, you know, kind of like the doctors. Some doctors put you on a treatment and it gets worse. Oh, well, let's change treatment. That one didn't work. That's what you and I were discussing, you know, okay. And I will straight up say I have asked every one of my oncologists every time they try to put me on a medication or a treatment. Well, have you tried it? Have you done what you're putting me on? And every one of my oncology guys has said no. So how in the F can you put, how can you be so eager to throw somebody on something you never tried yourself? To me, that's so, I don't even know the proper word. You know, it should be abusive in my opinion. Because if you don't know what the effects are like, how can you give that to somebody? You know, like with cop training, for example, if you're trying to be a policeman, you get tased, you get pepper sprayed, you have to do all the 9 yards. So you understand when you do that to the victim, they know what it's like. So you know what it's like. Well, doctors should be the same way, in my opinion. So I started seeing a naturopath and, I started seeing a naturopath back when I was in my mid-20s. But at that time, I had an ego, I was closed-minded, and not everything he told me I listened to, which probably is why I'm in my predicament I'm in now. So I started actually seeing him again on a regular basis in, June or July last year, after I quit chemo. I'm like, hey, what's your thoughts about doing things naturally? What do you suggest? And he had suggested European mistletoe and keto. And mind you, at the time, that's why I went keto, you know, for a couple of months to see what it did, because my naturopath suggested it. So after a couple of months of being keto, like I said, the cancer cells were disappearing. The tumors were shrinking. And I'm like, oh, let's go to carnivore. But what I was getting at is with this naturopath that I see, anything he's tried to recommend or prescribe me to try, I've asked him, have you done it? And every time he says yes. Everything I've been on that I've taken myself through the naturopathic office, my naturopath has done. The mistletoe, the testosterone shots, the vitamin D3, anything, even carnivore. My naturopath is carnivore. I mean, he's kind of ketovore, carnivore. I know he bounces back and forth, but to find a doctor, naturopath, whatever, that practices what he preaches is so far and few between in this world anymore. And that is why I certainly love the YouTube aspect, because I found Dr. Sean Baker, you know, I found Dr. Anthony Chafee. I found you. I mean, you're not a doctor yet. You never know if you want to be. Well, I mean, with the knowledge you've learned, you know, you might as well be a doctor without the label. You know, that's how I view myself as. I don't view myself as a doctor. I mean, I'm not gone to school for it. But how can anybody know an experience better than living through it? I mean, you could read it in a book all you want, but unless you live through it, the living through it and winning through it means more than any book experience, in my opinion. So yeah, when I started the gym, I've gone 6 days a week since day one, a year and a half now to the gym. I'm actually, today's date, I'm about 20 pounds heavier than I was the day I started the gym, and most of that's muscle. Some of it's ego, but most of it's muscle. You know, I'm down to about 13% body fat on a regular basis. I bounce between 12 and 15, depending on, you know, my mood, on my eating habits. But carnivore, man, I have never felt so good in my life. Carnivore. For the past 10, 11 months, I could eat. I don't bloat afterwards. I don't get sick afterwards. I don't. What is it? The afternoon power nap people get when they have carbs, you know, it's like you feel good in the morning to eat some food. And then, you know, noon, 1 o'clock comes and you're just done for. I have energy all day long. Like I have so much energy. It's hard to sleep sometimes. My skin's glowing better. I used to have really bad acne, like all over my body, like big boils. And that's just from all the toxins I was eating, trying to get out of my system. Even with my beard, this is the nicest my beard's looked my whole life. And what I've been using is beef tallow, just rubbing it on there. I mean, I don't use like straight out of the jar. I buy special, you know, beef tallow stuff that's meant for beards. But simple little things.
Quick interruption. Thank you so much for watching. If you're interested in learning more about our documentary, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet, or supporting it, please visit donate.healinghumanity.movie. Our goal is to reach millions of people that are hopeless right now, and sharing the examples of real people over the course of 1 year that are undertaking a proper human diet to overcome obesity, type 2 diabetes, depression, anxiety, fertility issues. We couldn't do it without you. We thank you so much. We are also selling these shirts, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet. Every penny we get from those goes towards the documentary. And last, we have memberships. If you click the little join button, it's best to do it on desktop. Under any one of my YouTube videos, you can join and become a member. We have hundreds of members right now. We do members only videos. We do members only behind the scenes. You can email me as a member and I'll answer you. And every penny from that goes to support the documentary. And the last thing is, we have these Redmond's portable salt shakers. These things are awesome. You can get the best salt. You can take it with you. We sell these on the website along with our water bottles and cutting boards, and every penny from all of those goes 100% towards supporting the documentary. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is completely free. All of these links are in the description below. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to today's video.
Make a huge difference on how our bodies perform. I've been trying to explain people to think of the human body as like an engine. Like a vehicle engine, you know, some engines are gas, some engines are diesel, but if you put the wrong fuel source in it, what happens? It don't run, or doesn't run very good, or it breaks down, blows rods, or whatever. Our bodies are the same way. Just because it's food, or it fits in the mouth, doesn't mean we should eat it. No. Arguing is not the proper word, but I have heated discussions with friends and family members sometimes because they'll eat something and they'll complain about getting sick afterwards. Me, I'm blunt. I'm like, hey, you just ate poison. That's why. And I explain, hey, this is why you're sick. And then they get mad at me because I'm pointing a finger at them because they're at fault.
They're in denial. I love that. I have the same thing. We just had this big family get together and all these people are eating cupcakes and garbage food. And afterwards they're like, oh, my shoulder hurts. My elbow hurts. I'm like, you just ate a whole bunch of highly inflammatory food. Your body's highly inflamed and you're confused and complaining about it. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it makes no sense to me. I mean, with what I've learned now, like a couple of years ago, I was that same person eating cupcakes and complaining, you know, but once you see the light, if that's the proper term, but once you see the pathway of how you feel and how your body is supposed to perform, it is so hard to go back to eating, to go back to your statement about inflammation and pain, you know. I've had 22 broken bones my whole life so far. I've had 12 plus surgeries, half a dozen plus concussions, and my pain levels on a daily basis are down low. Like, I don't have hardly any pain anymore, and I used to live in pain daily. Like, in high school times, I was already a pill addict on Vicodin because I had that much pain already because of all my broken bones as a kid. I mean, shit, by high school, I already had 14 broken bones.
Wow. The fuel analogy you made before, I love that one too, because I'll get people saying to me right now, well, can't you just add some vegetables in? And I use the same analogy you said. It's like, this is like a sports car, right? And I'm putting high octane fuel in it, meat. Why would I take some watered down, rusty old fuel, vegetables, and sprinkle a little bit of that in with the high octane? It's not going to do anything for me. It doesn't make any sense.
It's just going to make you misfire.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been really trying to broaden my horizon on my vocabulary skills and my way to explain things better. I've been a logger my whole life. Since as soon as I graduated high school, I went into the woods, you know, so I have a foul mouth. I have an attitude. Like, I'm trying to become a better version of myself. I mean, especially with the YouTube stuff, I got to really watch what I say because, I mean, I want to hit a vast majority of people, you know, versus just, I found out quick in my journey, not everybody likes the straightforwardness, which I get, you know, some people get offended by that, but the fuel analogy is 100% true. I cannot get over how important it is to fuel our bodies the proper way. Like even this water jug right here, I got a 1 gallon water jug and it's filled with water, alkaline water from a Kagan machine and salt. Because where salt goes, the water follows. And what's crazy to me about that statement with water and salt is 9 times out of 10, when somebody winds up in the ER room or an ambulance ride or whatever, what's the first things the paramedics do? They hook you up to an IV bag. And what's in the IV bag? Salt water, basically. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a proper term for it, but it's basically salt water, because the first thing they're trained to do is, oh, everybody in America is already naturally dehydrated because of our lifestyle and our food choices.
Right.
I've actually quadrupled my salt intake from last year till this year, and I am pissing less. My muscles aren't sore anymore. And what I've realized, like I said, with where salt goes, water follows. Your muscles, you know, they're not just muscle tissue. There's water in there. There's other stuff in there to make the muscles work. And your muscles are sore because you're not getting lubed up properly with the water. So if you get enough salt in your system, your pain's going to not be there, or your soreness isn't going to be there like it was, because you're more lubed up, if that's the proper term. Right. Kind of like a door hinge with oil.
Right. Yeah.
Throw oil on it, it'll stop creaking.
Yep. Anthony, can we just step back for a minute, and can you just talk a little bit more? Because I can't imagine what it's like getting the diagnosis that you had. Can you talk us through that a little bit? Like, what was your initial reaction and thoughts, and I guess friends and family when you were diagnosed? What do they tell you when you're diagnosed? Like, how did that go?
So my 31st birthday was my diagnosis date at the cancer center locally. It was me and my mother that walked in there. The oncologist I had at the time was Dr. D. She was a nice lady. She was a temporary. She moved back to California. But her educated guess, like I said, you know, she's like, hey, Mr. Hayduk, I don't know how to break this to you. Your results came back as stage 4 GIST. GIST is actually cancerous. It's not benign. I'm sorry you got misled. My educated guess is 6 months, because I asked her, what's my time frame? I lost my dad within a few months of his diagnosis, so what's mine? No, because I wanted to get all my ducks in a row in case it was my time to go. So her educated guess, with her knowledge she had, you know, her, and I don't hold her to it, you know, because doctors are humans, you know, but her educated guess was 6 months. And I believed it initially. I was like, all right, let's hop on treatments, do what we got to do. Whatever you say, you're the boss. But I will say, from the time I got told I had 6 months to the time I left the oncology office that day, I already told my mother and I already told my doctor that day. I was like, you know what? I may have cancer. I may have stage 4. I may be numbered on time. But I'm going to take that cancer, I'm going to put it in my back pocket, and I'm going to live my life the way I need to live my life. And it could ride with me, or it could fall behind, but I'm going to make cancer my bitch. It's not going to make me its bitch. And that's been my slogan since day one. Sorry for cussing on the thing. You could blurt it out. But
I think that's going to be the title of the video.
And it's my attitude, dude. Like, I even have it on my wrist right here. My quote I look up every day says, making cancer my bitch. Every day I wake up, because I don't want my illness to define who I am. You know, I want me to define who I am, and my illness could ride with me or fall behind, but it's not going to control me. I mean, it's kind of controlled me. It got me going carnivore. It got me going to the gym, but that's a fair trade-off. I mean, the way I feel now versus a year ago, let alone 10 years ago, like, I'm 32 years old, going on 33. I'm supposed to be dead, and I feel better than I have my whole life. You know, wow. So just because somebody gets a cancer diagnosis or any type of diagnosis, it's not game over. You know, it's game over when you say it's game over, and it all starts in the brain. That's what I tell everybody from day one, is like, you have to have the mindset. We have two choices in life, whether it's positivity or negativity. Those are the only two. Which would you rather spread? Which would you rather enjoy? They're both contagious, and positivity will always surpass negativity. So you got to think at first, you know, I've thought since day one, I'm going to win this battle and I believe what I think. So that's where it starts. It all starts in the brain. And, a lot of people, and this part is kind of hard for me to say, you know, I'm in my, going on my second year of my cancer journey. And I probably lost 6 or 7 people in the last 2 years from cancer, whether it's people I've known or people I've met in the cancer center. And it to me, it's heartbreaking and sad because nobody will ever know on if or what would have happened if they would have changed their ways, you know? And I say that because, example, one of my neighbors, he was actually in there doing, you know, in-house treatment. But when he's sitting there in the machine hooked up to the radiation, drinking apple juice and orange juice and having a bagel, that's all pure sugar feeding it, you know? And I explained this to him, and I've even explained this to some of my, you know, local oncology team. And the ones that are open-minded change and feel better, and the ones that aren't, you know, end up declining. And it's so sad that with cancer or disease in general, it doesn't matter, cancer or diabetes, it's a fear tactic in my mind, you know, whether it's the doctors put it out there or their own patients put it out there, you know, their own self, you get it in your brain that you're scared. Oh, I got my diagnosis, now what? You already had the illness before you had the diagnosis. You didn't know about it. It didn't affect you. Just because you now have the diagnosis, it affects you. You know, you need to have that mindset is, with or without that diagnosis, I have the power to change. You know, I have the power to do what needs to be done. And I wish more people had that attitude.
Right. That's so important. I'm glad you said that. I can't even imagine. I can't put myself in your shoes getting that diagnosis and then having the mindset. But one of the things I've learned is when you have that, you can be positive or negative, like you said. When you have the negative, when you have the stress, which you're going to have when you have the diagnosis, releases cortisol. Cortisol turns to glucose. Glucose feeds the cancer. So you're just perpetuating the problem worse. It's almost like you're right. If you were never diagnosed, or if you could get the diagnosis and not stress or worry about it, it's like you said, that mindset is a huge part of the thing for sure.
Yeah, mindset is a big part of it, you know. And don't get me wrong, I cried my eyes out on my diagnosis day. I had my moment of grief, but I allowed it to be a moment and I got over it. I mean, I'm not over it. I know I got cancer. It's in the back of my head, you know. My next scan's in October, which this is the first time in my 2 years of cancer career I get to go 6 months between scans. So that's a good feat. But people need to understand it. It's all in your head. Like, you have the power to control yourself. I don't remember the guy's name. He was a Japanese scientist. There's the power of water. He studied it, and I think he froze a bunch of vials of water, half he talked positive two, half he talked negative two. And when he pulled them out of the freezer, the half that he talked negative two made ugly shapes. And then the half you talk positive to made pretty shapes. Well, our mind's the same way on how we perceive ourselves. You know, if we're constantly negative on ourselves, negative actions are going to happen with on ourselves. For a quick comparison, you know, say you go to the gym and you want to bench 150 pounds because you can't bench it yet. And you tell yourself, oh, I can't bench 150. Well, more than likely, you're not going to move it because you're already doubting yourself. But if you go in there having the attitude, oh, I can move it, it's lightweight, that's going to give you that extra edge to succeed. You might not succeed the first try, but it's going to give you that extra edge to get there, you know?
Right.
And even whether it's cancer or type 2 diabetes or whatever illness that it is, don't be afraid to experiment a little bit. I mean, of course, ask your doctors. I want people to just like ignore their doctors completely. But a doctor doesn't know how you feel or how I feel. We do. You know, it's up to our individual selves to understand how we feel and then explain that to somebody else if we don't know how to you know, fix that situation.
Right. Did any of your doctors ever mention anything about diet or nutrition?
Every one of my doctors I've been to, as far as oncology locally and even over in Portland, and even the nutritionalist I've been to, nobody has mentioned anything about a proper way to eat with cancer. Everybody since day one has said, as long as you keep food in your system, that's what is important. You know, nutrition is nutrition when you're battling a disease like this. And so that really bums me out hearing that, especially with all the research I've been doing in the last 2 years because of Professor Thomas Sidfrey. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. You know, cancer is metabolically driven. I mean, mine's, according to my doctor, DNA driven, you know, it's hereditary, but that still comes from dysfunctional mitochondria, which changes your DNA. So through lifestyle and food, you or I still have the power to change our DNA slightly. It's not going to be aggressive. You know, you can't go from male to female just by changing your way of eating. But, you know, you could still change damaged cells to good cells by changing the way you're eating. And it really bums me out that the medical field doesn't know this as a whole, you know. I don't know what parts of the world you live in. I'm over here in Western Washington, you know, West Coast. And at least in my hometown, we're a pretty small town. And we are probably, I wouldn't say we're the bottom of the food pyramid as far as medical goes, but, you know, we're definitely not towards the top. You know, we have small incomes, a small hospital, not much for knowledge. I've been trying to spread all this information to my doctors. Like every chance I go to the doctor, I tell them, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is how I feel. Another quick subject to go about with carnivore and problems is I've dealt with AFib most of my life, you know, AFib, irregular heartbeat, stuff like that. It all started when I was 18 in high school. Energy drinks caused it. And so, plus I have a defect with my heart anyway. Your heart has three muscles and they're attached and they beat like this. My heart has the three muscles, but two of the muscles are fused together. So they beat goofy, which doesn't help the AFib very much. But during chemo times, my AFib got worse. There's probably six or seven different hospital trips because of irregular heartbeats. Like I spent a couple of days in the ICU with a regular heartbeat, and I've been zapped by the machines to get my heart straightened out before. And the most craziest part of everything is since I've been carnivore based since September 1st till now, 11 months, I have not had any heart problems, no AFibrillation, no seizures, no blackouts. I actually ran my first 3 miles last month just to do it, you know, and I don't even do cardio. So the fact of going from running hardly anywhere to running 3 miles and not having any heart problems during which, you know, it's amazing to me. And then going through research on, okay, well, what's the common factor with heart problems and food? I actually started calling around and researching different epileptic centers because I've dealt with epileptic seizures because of heart problems. And some of the bigger epileptic centers throughout the world, the United States, actually put people on a keto/carnivore diet for it. But they don't tell you that around here in my hometown. I've been to 4 different heart doctors within a 4-hour radius of my house. And every one of the heart doctors keeps trying to put me on heart medication. Yeah. And I even went to a heart doctor about a month ago out of town, about 2 hours away from my house, just to see a different doctor to try to get a different mindset. And I straight up told him, hey, I've been on Metoprolol before. I've been on this other heart medication before. Everything that you guys were prescribing me didn't do anything for me besides make the situation worse or cost me money. I've been carnivore-based now. Well, at that point, no, it's 10 months. No more seizures, no more blackouts, no more AFibrillation. And you know what my heart doctor asked me? You want to get back on Metoprolol? That's the only thing he said. I'm like, did you not just hear any of the effing shit I just said?
Wow.
So I got to get another heart doctor now. But it's like the closed-mindedness.
That's crazy. I have a similar story. So the medicine, the Metoprolol, I've got two of those in here, lisinopril, atorvastatin, Flecainide. I had five different heart medications. And just to make the story really quick, I've had an irregular heartbeat since birth, and I had congestive heart failure. And all of this, for people that don't believe me, is in my medical records. I'll prove it to anyone that wants to see it. Completely gone on carnivore. I've been carnivore over a year now. My congestive heart failure, I had a heart echo done. It's completely reversed. My heart wasn't keeping up with the needs of my body. I had a low ejection fraction. It's completely normal now. But the craziest thing, Anthony, similar to you, I had some AFibs, but I had a highly erratic heartbeat since birth. It's in all my medical records. My heartbeat's completely normal on carnivore. Some of this stuff, it's like unbelievable. I went to my doctor like you did. You'd think the guy would be like, what the heck did you do? Like, what's going on? Nothing, nothing. He's like, interesting, interesting. And the next, like for me, I'm like, okay, I'm a big boy. I could just deal with it, whatever. I'm just going to move on. But the next person that's going to go in there with AFibs or heart issues or problems, he's not going to say anything to them about diet.
Yeah. Nothing.
So it pisses me off too. It makes me so mad. They don't care. Just like, what? Same thing too. Then he sent me a letter in my notes that said, my cholesterol is slightly elevated and I should go back. I should return to a normal diet. And I'm like, I'm down 100 pounds since my heaviest. I don't have depression, anxiety. I got over IBS. I had arthritis in my foot. I had gallstones, kidney stones. I had all these congestive heart failure, irregular heartbeat. All of that has fixed, and you got no questions, and you said I should go back to doing what I was doing before. It's insane. It's just craziness.
To me, it goes back to ego because it goes against what he was taught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not – like you said earlier, he ain't practicing what he's preaching. This guy's overweight, and he's got his own health. I'm not judging him, but that's the truth. I would much rather see someone like your naturopath or someone that's done this. They're walking the walk. Like I see Dr. Chafee, and I'm like, I want to be more like that guy. He looks great, but his mind is there. He's like on top of there. Dr. Barry or Dr. Yeah. Baker, all these guys. Like that's what I want to be more like. But you're right. These guys haven't walked the walk. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, to go on to that real quick is my nutritionist that I've seen in the past. You know, mind you, here I'm a cancer patient. I'm at the time I was pretty skinny, you know, because of cancer and chemo. I didn't have any muscle mass to me. But every nutritionalist I've seen was, you know, obese. In polite terms, just nothing against them. But here you are, a nutritionalist, and you're supposed to be an advanced studied in this, but you're three times my size, yeah. You know? And how am I supposed to feel getting insight from somebody that's telling me what to do, but they don't look healthy.
Right.
You know? And, I mean, and that's kind of like goes back to the judging a book by its cover. I get that. You know, you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover. But it's like if you're trying to go to the gym and get in shape, are you going to go to some fat coach or are you going to go to a coach that's in shape? And exactly. I don't mean that in a rude way. It's just point blank way.
Right.
You know, I myself would rather go to hire a coach or hire somebody that looks what I'm trying to get to, that can at least walk the talk versus somebody that just talks.
Right.
It's really sad to me that some of the medical professions are just so close-minded, you know.
Yeah. You're right with the word ego, though. Because
they get in trouble, you know, if they speak outside the box.
Yeah. Well, you hit the nail on the head with ego, because I've experienced God complex, ego, whatever. Like, they have all of the answers. That's a big part of the problem. And then, like you said, too, some of them, I try to give them some leeway because I've interviewed some doctors and they're like, listen, I tried to tell them about diet for the first 20 years of my career and nobody's listening. So it's just to the point I don't do it anymore. But my argument is when you have someone that's desperate, someone that's diagnosed with cancer or someone that's got suicidal depression and they're like, I need help, something. Those are the people you should be able to go to and say, maybe it's your nutrition. Maybe it's your diet, or think outside the box. It's like, these doctors became doctors to heal. They should be able to figure some. I barely graduated from high school. And
same.
These doctors that became doctors and went to school for all this time to heal, they should have some of this figured out. You take your dog to the veterinarian, the first thing they ask you is, what are you feeding them? Every doctor visit I've ever been to, they never ask about nutrition or food. Like, come on, really? It's that's just crazy.
Yeah.
I could rant about that stuff for a
while. You're fine, buddy.
I was going to ask you, you I think we know, we talked about Professor Siefried, cancer thrives on sugar, glucose, you're avoiding those things. But absent that, wouldn't it just make sense that you're going through cancer that eating a carnivore diet where now it seems like you said you feel better than you have most of your life. You're working out, you're putting on muscle. You're probably, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming maybe your sleep is better. Your immune system's probably stronger. Like for all of those reasons alone, wouldn't that be a good enough argument to probably consider carnivore, even if you didn't believe the sugar glucose stuff about cancer?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, with Professor Siefried, you know, it's glucose and glutamine that feeds cancer, at least 99% of cancers. Yeah, besides the fact, without cancer, the equation, like the brain fog's gone, the depression shit's gone. Like, I've been suicidal most of my life off and on. I never had the cojones to follow through with it. I tried. But since I've been carnivore, I don't have any negative thoughts. Like, I'm to the point now with carnivore-based and my mindset-based that I'm so positive. Even if something negative happens, I'm trying to figure out how can I reverse this negativity and find a light in it, you know? So no brain fog. I mean, I'm actually got caught Thursday for going for having my side-by-side on the road, which is illegal in Washington State, but we have the right to travel, you know, and that's in the Constitution. So I'm going to take it to court and see what happens. But that's because I can think so clearly now for the first time in my life, you know. Not because I want to be a smart ass, or just I feel like I'm quick-witted now. It's like, oh, you give me an excuse or a comeback, and that better be a good one because I'm going to piece it apart real quick, you know. Yeah. So yeah, my sleep is better. You did not put any words in my mouth. You know, sleep's better. My mood's better. Suicidal stuff's gone. Energy levels, dude, through the roof. Like beforehand when I was carb based with different diets, I would actually have to bring food with me to the gym so I could finish my workout routine. Cause I go to the gym for 2 hours a day, which is probably overkill, but I have a lot of energy to burn, and I didn't want to die. So I'm like, hey, I got a body in motion stays in motion. You know, that's the attitude I had. So when I was carb based, I'd actually bring food with me to the gym so I could continue my workout because I'd run out of food. You know, I'd run out of energy. And I do fasting, intermittent fasting, sometimes aggressive fasting. But yeah, my intermittent fasting, 16 hours off, no eating, 8 hours of eating. And then once a month, I usually do an aggressive fast for a day or two. You know, the longest I've gone is 62 hours, no food, 62 and a half, no food. But even still, I go to the gym when I don't eat. I mean, I don't work out as hard as I would with food, of course. But that's a whole nother myth that's been broken, is you're not supposed to exercise without food in your system. It's like, I actually do better, at least cardio-wise, with no food in my system. It makes no sense to me because it goes against everything we've been taught, or I've been taught growing up. But like I said, there's no negative side effects to carnivore, except for I love pasta. You know, can't do pasta anymore, but I don't miss the way pasta made me feel, so my cravings for it isn't there anymore. Mm. You know, I feel like I'm high on life with the way I'm eating, if that makes sense. You know, it's hard to feel bad.
Yeah.
And people, and I'm sure depending on where you're at in the United States, food prices vary, you know, but with my way of eating carnivore now compared to my old ways of eating, I'm actually saving a whole bunch of money, like a ton of money, like hundreds of dollars, you know, a month I'm saving.
Same here. People always get confused on that too, because I think they come at it from the mindset of the standard American diet where you're grazing and eating food, multiple meals and snacks and this and that. Sometimes I'll eat twice a day. I did a stretch where I ate one meal a day and I'm full, like it fills you up. But right now I was eating the same thing as you. I got it right there. I had scrambled eggs, ground beef, and some little chunks of bacon in it. That's all I ate today. And I'll probably eat maybe like 6 hours from now something else, but it's eggs and ground beef. Like, can't get less expensive than that. Versus before, it would have been some cereal, then an apple, then 2 hours later, we've been hungry again, some sauces, some spices, dessert. What are we going to grab an ice cream afterwards? You eliminate all that stuff. It's a lot less expensive.
So back when I was working, you know, tree work, climbing, I never actually did the math, but I could say I was probably anywhere from $60 to $100 a day in food back when I was working. But, you know, coffee shop in the morning, that's $5 to $10 depending on what coffee you get, you know, then stop at the gas station for some cheap food. There's, you know, another $10. Lunchtime, go out to wherever, a restaurant, or get some burgers. There's another $20, $30. And then dinner, you know, go to the restaurant and have a drink. That's another $50 to $100 depending on what you do.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, I was going through some serious money on other diets, on food, and I was, you know, poisoning myself, not knowing it. No, I knew I was poisoning myself with the alcohol. Nothing good comes from that. But I didn't know carbs were bad. You know, I didn't know some of the vegetables were bad. Not all vegetables are bad, but some are. I've actually really found that out recently with my cancer crap is, you know, a lot of plants don't digest. Like, it comes out the same shape it goes in. You know, if I don't chew it good enough, I can tell what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's because our body can't break it down.
Yeah. Yeah. I interviewed a guy, Lee Kopis. He lost his colon and he's got a colostomy bag, so he can see right when he eats. And he was doing vegan diet for a while, vegetable, plant. He's like, anytime I eat a plant, almost every single time it goes straight through, and he could see right in the bag. And he's like, I'd eat meat and nothing, because your body's absorbing all of the nutrients from the meat. The rest of that stuff is just garbage. It's just, it's literally waste in, waste out, and a big waste of money, because you're spending all your money filling up the grocery cart with all this stuff that you end up just pooping out the toilet anyways. It's just all waste.
Yeah, 100%, you know.
And the toll. Think about this, Anthony, the toll that that takes on our digestive system every single day, putting this crazy food in that we weren't intended to digest. It takes an incredible amount of energy to try to even digest that food. And then multiple times a day for decades and decades, people wonder why they're always fatigued and sick, but the toll that would put on your body over the course of your life is just incredible.
Yeah, well, even look at the life expectancy in the last 10 years for humans. You know, in the United States, our life expectancy has dropped by almost 10 years in the last 15 years. And it's just because of the way our lifestyle and food has became.
Yeah.
But to go back on the colostomy bag and, you know, absorption issues, on a regular basis, I'm putting down 2 to 3 pounds of food a day. My breakfast, my brunch, my first meal a day, I eat 2 to 3 meals a day just because I'm trying to bulk in the gym. Once I get to my size I want to get, you know, I'll go back to 1 or 2 meals a day. But, you know, I'm putting down, my breakfast is 1 pound of 70-30 mixture ground beef. I put 2 pieces of bacon with that, 2 pieces of jowl, which jowl is the fat of the neck of the pig. And then I have 4 to 6 eggs. It's one big scramble. It's like 2 pounds of food. It takes me about an hour to eat it. Sometimes I break it up into 2 meals. It just really depends on my routine that day. And then before I go to the gym, I'll have some butter bites and a beef patty just for a pre-workout. And then after the gym, it's either the same meal as I did for brunch, which is the scramble, or I'll do a steak if I have the money. But I go to the restroom every other day, you know, and it's amazing because, you know, if I'm eating, say, 5 pounds of food in 2 days and I'm only going to the bathroom every other day, people are like, oh, you constipated. And I'm like, no, if I'm constipated, then I'm going to have a fucking belly. You know, I'm going to be bloated. I'm going to feel like shit, lethargic feeling. And I have abs 24/7. So I'm not bloated. I'm not constipated. It's like you said, and the numbers aren't 100%, of course, but like when you eat carnivore, 90% of what you're eating is getting absorbed into your body. You know, it's all nutrient dense. And so it goes back to about 20 minutes ago when we were talking about engines and fuel sources. This is what our bodies are designed for. You know, when a person eats a poor diet and goes to number 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day, you're literally just going to the gas pump with your vehicle and shoving the nozzle in the gas tank and letting it spill onto the ground because it's got nowhere to go, you know? So like, you really like throwing money away that much. You just want to keep filling the void.
Right.
And the saddest part about that with the research I've done is the food in today's world, as far as processed stuff, the vast majority of it all goes after, I think it's the T3 cell receptor on your tongue. It's a taste bud. It's the most active taste bud. a lot of bigger franchises and businesses study that taste bud, because that taste bud gives you that chemical endorphin dump, just like the gym would, or doing something you don't want to do would. And so back in the day before technology, we'll just say back in the 90s for that matter, when I was a kid, going out riding your bicycle, having fun, getting exercise, you'd get that endorphin dump, that enjoyment. Well, now in 2024, you go to the store and you buy that shitty built ice cream that's got a bazillion different chemicals in it, and you get that same endorphin dump that you would if you went to the gym, or, if you went out and exercised, and it's all chemically induced, though, as the sad part.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I've learned less is more, as far as ingredients. The least amount of ingredients, the better you are.
100%. Yeah, that was one of my big takeaways of doing this documentary was, first, this was going to be all about the carnivore diet. Now it's just about individual stories, eating a proper human diet. And really what it's come down to is people just returning to what's natural, single ingredient foods that humans were intended to eat. As we've gotten further away from what's natural for humans, we're just getting sicker and sicker. It's like so crystal clear. I don't people on the standard American diet, they got the brain fog or whatever. Some of this is so confusing. But as we're eating this crazy food that we weren't intended to eat, and, we're staring at screens, we're not getting fresh air, we're not exercising like we used to, we're just getting sicker and sicker. There's like a perfect correlation to it. There's like common sense stuff. But I guess when you're in that fog, it's hard for people to see it. But one of the other questions I was going to ask you was, what advice would you give someone, a family or a friend, if they were diagnosed with cancer?
Oh, honestly, my advice for somebody that got a cancer diagnosis or any serious type of medical diagnosis is goes back to, my statement earlier is, have your moment of grief or moments of grief. We're all allowed to have grief. It's not against the law to cry and be upset about the situation. Have your moment, be upset about it, but then take control of the situation. Put that cancer card or Crohn's card or whatever the diagnosis you got was, put that in your back pocket and make a game plan. Learn how to be positive. I wake up every day, my first thing out of my mouth is, today is a good day, I'm blessed to be alive. You start out the day with a positive action and a positive thought, and that's the best way to do it, and then for furthermore is, besides the positive thoughts and actions, is make a game plan on what you're trying to accomplish, and how. So in my case, I want to survive and beat cancer naturally. And so I've put in the last year and a half to understand how to, I tried chemo, it didn't work. And now I'm trying to understand what different food groups do to my illness or the body. And I will straight up say, a body that's excessively inflamed can't heal. Mother Nature and God made us for a reason how we are. A body that is fed properly could, I can't say cure everything, but cure most things. It all starts in the mindset, though. You got to be positive, then you got to believe in your heart what you believe in your brain, and then just take the steps to follow that. And being honest, I'm fairly big now. I sent you some pictures on email. I actually sent you a couple more this morning, so I'm excited to see you once you get this all done. But I didn't get this big overnight. It all starts consistency. It's one step in front of the other. And it doesn't matter if it's an inch step or a 12-inch stride or, you're taking a 3-foot stride. A step is a step. And if you move backwards, that's fine. You can still turn around to progress and go back forward again. Just like with Jeff, the Prosperous, when he went to Italy, his cancer got worse because he slacked off on his diet and his lifestyle choices, and it got worse, and he realized it, and he fixed his mistake, and he's back on the straight and narrow, and his cancer is under control again. So just because it does get worse doesn't mean it's over. There's always tomorrow, there's always another pathway to try. I will say, though, the carnivore diet is a must for anybody with an autoimmune disease, cancer, Crohn's. You don't have to try it your whole life, but at least give it 30 days. Example, we live to be, 70 years old now, 75? What's 30 days out of your life? That's like 0.00004%. Like, give yourself 30 days of courage and try it. It may be hard, it may be scary, but you might feel better after 30 days. And so it might lead to 60 days. Another one too is, I will tell for somebody with a diagnosis, is don't let the fear win. Because it is very hard and is very scary getting a diagnosis, especially that you're not ready for. But learn how to control that fear, you know. I've been really living my life more like a buffalo. A buffalo is one of the very only creatures that I've known about that when a storm comes, the buffalo will turn and face the storm and go through it head on. The path is harder, but it's a shorter distance. I don't want to drag this shit out for fucking years, part of my language, but just grab it by the cojones and go for it, you know. Be scared, but do it with heart. I've been facing every one of my fears since I got my diagnosis. I've learned how to swim, and I've hated water my whole life. I didn't even get lessons. I just jumped in the pool. I was like, I'll either survive or I won't, you know. I started riding my bicycle again, and, you know, in my teen years, that's all I ever did was ride my bicycle. I was a really big introvert most of my life, didn't want to talk to people, and now I'm on YouTube, you know, who knows how many people are going to watch me, and I got fucking tears in my eyes in the meantime, and I don't care. It's like, you know, just be true to yourself. You know, it's never game over when you get a diagnosis. You know, we have the power within ourselves.
You know, one of the things I'm seeing that you're doing, and I was so fortunate, I got to interview Professor Seyfried at Boston College and learn some more of it. But one of the things that he said that was really powerful was, if you're diagnosed with cancer, you got to fight cancer. And this was his words. He said, there's people that say they fight cancer. Some of them aren't. They sit back and they take the medication and then they worry and then they do that. But, and then there's people that actually go out and are fighting it. And it seems like that's what you're doing. And that's what Jeff's doing. You're taking things into your own two hands and you're making cancer your bitch. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. It's up to the person wearing the disease, man, to win. A doctor could tell you, a doctor could have a fucking cure for you. You know, pardon language again. A doctor could have the cure. And you could take that magic pill, and it might not cure you because it still starts within you to fix yourself. My cancer diagnosis is the best thing that's ever happened to me, man. Like, I wasn't a bad version of myself prior to this, but I'm so much better now than I used to be, dude. Like, it's hard to fathom. I'm blessed for you. I'm blessed for Jeff. You know, without you guys being open about stuff you went through, I wouldn't even be open about my stuff. And I straight up said that to Jeff. One of my local buddies actually sent me a video of Jeff to Prosperous last year one day, and that's what got me interested in, you know, starting carnivore. I thought, well, this dude's on chemo and doing carnivore, what's my excuse, you know? So it just, be scared, be brave, but don't let it control you, you know? And even with chemo, it's like, I'm brave and proud of Jeff for doing what he's doing naturally and with chemo. It's like, if I was in his predicament, I'd be nervous too to get off chemo just because it's working, that it, with his regimen, you know. Right. Kind of hard to stop something that's working.
Right. That's a good point too. I get people asking me these things all the time. Like when I interviewed Professor Seyfried, that was the advice he gave, is if he was diagnosed with cancer, he would study his particular type of cancer like crazy, take it into his own two hands, and then make the decision on, do you do chemo? Do you not do chemo? Do you do this? But the fact that most people are diagnosed with cancer and they don't know about carnivore, metabolic therapy, nutrition, just as an additional tool in a toolbox, just as an additional option, is criminal to me. So I'm not going to stop talking about it. That was why we added cancer to the documentary, because
I want to buy a shirt, buddy.
I'll send you one. You don't got to buy one. We'll talk after this. I'd love to send you one. But yeah, everybody should have this as an option. It's crazy that we even have to discuss it just for all of the other reasons. But
yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool, though, too, that you found Jeff's video. I didn't realize. I didn't know that you found Jeff's video, and that's what kind of got you going on carnivore. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, I was always told, you know, red meat causes cancer. You know, that's the age bracket I'm in. That's what I was preached to. And so that was the absolute last diet I wanted to try. Then my buddy, who got me, like I said, he sent me a thing of Jeff and his success on carnivore and chemo. I'm like, here I, you know, failed chemo and wasn't brave enough to start the second type of chemo because the second type had worse, you know, side effects than the first type. And here's this guy got 10 years on me plus a family, but I don't have any wife or kids. You know, it's just me. And I got parents, of course, but I don't have any other responsibilities other than myself. And I was like, here's this guy got 10 years on me. He's got other responsibilities more than I have. And he's brave enough to do two things. And both things are dangerous. You know, carnivore is quote unquote dangerous because it causes cancer. But it's just, that's a crock of crap. Yeah. But he's on chemo too, and he's thriving. Like, look at those stairs he's running up, dude. It's like, that's insane.
He's nuts. I'm not hyping up Jeff. I filmed him for 5 days or so for the documentary. I legitimately could not keep up with the guy, and he had his chemo bag on him. He did chemo. He's like,
he's an all-star.
He's running, he's playing soccer. He's like, next, let's go. And it's just his energy too. It's crazy.
You know, like, so it's like with me.
And the fact that this dude, like you said, he's got a family. He's going through stage 4. He's got chemo. He's doing all this stuff. And then on top of it, he's doing all these YouTube videos just out of the kindness of his heart because he's a good dude and because he's got excess energy. It's just like another testament to what he's doing is obviously working pretty well.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, here I am just by myself trying to understand my own situation and, you know, get stressed out occasionally being your guest or his guest or whatever. I'm like, but, you know, in Jeff's case, like, he's got a dozen more things on his plate than I have, and he's doing it with, you know, ease, so to speak. But his bravery, you know, led to my bravery to be so open about it. It was like, because my father, you know, to bring up a quick subject, when he passed in 2019 of stage 4 bone and throat cancer, luckily a different type, but he kept it quiet. You know, nobody knew till the last couple of months of his life, and that's when he – and then it was gone, you know. And after seeing Jeff's video, I mean, I was kind of open about, hey, I got my surgery. Oh, it came back as cancerous. But then I kind of, you know, I wasn't very public on social media about it, you know. And then as soon as I started watching Jeff's stuff, I started everything. I was like, oh, if I'm getting worse, I'm getting better. It's all on my Facebook page. You know, I want people to know what's working or what's not working. And, it's just amazing how one person's bravery could lead to so many other people being brave.
I really appreciate you sharing your story, Anthony. Just like Jeff, your story is going to inspire a whole bunch of people. And that's like one of the most important things, I think, especially when it comes to cancer. It seems like you get diagnosed with cancer. I don't know what could be more hopeless, unfortunately, for most people, because a lot of them aren't given any sort of plan other than standard of care and just go eat whatever you want, do whatever you want, and take this chemo, and that's it, and don't think about it. But it seems like the people that I've interviewed that are having the most success are people like yourself, people like Jeff that take it into their own two hands. They make a plan, they follow the plan, and they're actually fighting and they're doing things and they have hope. And so your story, I think, is going to give a lot of people hope. It's going to inspire them just like Jeff's did. So I really appreciate you sharing your story.
Dude, I appreciate the opportunity to share, man. Jeff for 6 or 7 months now, and it wasn't until the last couple or like the last month is when me and him have been finally talking. Like, when the day I watched his first video, I'm like, I sent him a Facebook messenger. I'm like, this guy's not going to respond because he's popular, you know, he's helping everybody, he's not going to respond, a little old me. And then with my Dave Mack interview I did 2 months ago, with my cancer shrinking majorly, Jeff happened to see it on YouTube one day, a little pop-up of it, and he reached out to me over. He's like, and we started talking, and I'm like, it's just amazing how the world comes back around, you know? It's like, he's my role model, honestly. Like, if it wasn't for him, I definitely would not be in my predicament I'm in now, as far as, you know, with the bravery, being honest about everything. And I mean, it's amazing, you know, to be in such a part of something so cool, you know, and so meaningful. It's like, I'd rather be a part of this that actually has true meaning and true power behind it that could save people without a financial hiccup versus, you know, being a part of something that people got to go pay for to, you know, get treatment for. It's like, carnivore itself is an at-home therapy.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing, right? Anyone can do it. It doesn't cost a dime. I'm with you 100%. I said this before too. I don't know. I've been fortunate. Some of my stuff on YouTube has inspired people, and I get messages for people that they tried this and they overcame depression or overcame type 2 diabetes. And no joke, you could not write me a check. I said this in my earlier video. For $1 billion, I'd rip it up if it meant that if I never knew about carnivore, if I had to give that up. Or hearing these stories of people, like, what's better than that? Someone getting their life back and really, really living their life to the fullest. Like you said, that's a beautiful thing you said earlier, by the way, that you wake up just full of gratitude and thankful for the day. That has been, I've interviewed so many people for this documentary, and now it's one common thread with everyone. Yeah. Overwhelming gratitude. And imagine, Anthony, imagine this. If the whole world was eating a proper human diet like we are, and the whole world had that gratitude and woke up like that, and that zen and that energy, man, it would be crazy. What a world.
So to go on to that real quick, if we all had that same, I wouldn't say thought process, but, you know, if we all had the same, if we all felt the way you and I feel, you know, because of the way we take care of ourselves, exercise, the proper human diet, and what I would envision in my brain, instead of going down the road seeing fast food every block, you'd see farm stands every couple blocks.
Yeah,
you know, because it'd be all healthy foods we were going for, you know. And the tax issue wouldn't be the problem anymore. Our country wouldn't be so screwed up anymore, because right now, I mean, I don't know the numbers 100%. I don't study it. I hate politics stuff. But right now we have more chiefs than Indians, you know. Far as we have more people collecting taxes and collecting, you know, disability. I'm one of the disability people because of my cancer, but versus worker bees.
Yeah.
And it's because if we're so unhealthy as a nation, we have say 30% of the population or 40% of the population supporting 100% of the population, versus if we all got metabolically healthy and lived a good lifestyle, you know, imagine how many people would be working. You know, we'd have 80% of the population working versus 30 or 40% of the population working. And that, look at our tax money we'd have.
Right.
You know, and of course, if they spent tax money properly versus sending it to other countries for stuff, you know, we got to take care of our own first.
Right.
And that's another quick one is, you know, instead of moving your garden to where the butterflies and bees are, till the soil so the butterflies and bees come to you, you know. That's what I've been doing as a cancer patient. I've been taking care of my one self, taking care of my soils, and the success, the feeling good, the friendships, you know, the communication skills, the happiness, the confidence is all coming from that. But I had to start at the ground, and I start at the soils, and that starts within myself.
100%. Awesome. Man, this has been great. I really appreciate it. For people that want to learn more about you, is there somewhere they can find you, or do you want to share anywhere?
Yeah. Well, right off the get-go, I have Facebook. It's open to the public. At least my cancer stuff is. If you can't find it, send me a friend request. I do plan to make a new Facebook page. Me, speaking of, I'm on yours now, Return to Natural. I'm excited for that. Thank you. But if you want to find me on Facebook, it's just Anthony Hayduck. It's on the screen there. I do have TikTok. I don't post there as much. I'm getting better with technology. My TikTok is Making Cancer My Bitch without the H. So it wouldn't let me spell it all the way out. But, yeah, you're more than welcome to find me. Reach out to me with questions. I'm only one person, so sometimes I don't respond instantly. It might take me a day, might take me a week, might take me a month. It really depends on how many people are getting a hold of me. But I will respond eventually, so be patient.
Love it. And I'll put specific links in the description below. So if you guys want to learn more about Anthony, you can click those in the description below. Really appreciate you coming on, Anthony. Love your story. I know this sounds like I'm a middle schooler, but I say this all the time, man. You got a new buddy here. I'd love to talk to you more, maybe have you on a live stream or do something again in the future.
Dude, anytime.
Awesome. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
Thank you, buddy.